Le 30 septembre est désormais férié. Le gouvernement du Canada fait de la Journée nationale de la vérité et de la réconciliation un congé obligatoire, une reconnaissance qui dépasse les simples frontières de l'Alberta. Wendy Goulet, habitante de Rivière-la-Paix, travailleuse pour les services autochtones et les services sociaux communautaires et dont le père est un survivant des écoles résidentielles, nous donne son avis sur cette reconnaissance nationale.
Pretty good that the federal government announced that as a national holiday. I think it's about time. We need that day. As far as I'm concerned, I think as a people, we've paid enough. We paid enough with everything that we've lost with the residential schools and stuff like that. That having this day is just, it's nice that we can have that recognition. Of course, I would. Would have been even better if Alberta would have recognized the same day as a holiday.
Si la reconnaissance est bien fédérale, elle ne l'est pas pour autant au niveau provincial, ce qui n'empêchera pas de célébrer.
On September 30th at 1 o'clock, we are hosting a pipe ceremony at the St. Augustine Mission that is down Shaftesbury Trail. It's at the Peace River Correctional Site. That's where our residential school was. We're going to host the pipe ceremony. People can attend that. That will be at 1 o'clock. And then at 3 o'clock at Riverfront Park, that's when we're going to start our day for the community. We'll have some keynote speakers speak from 3 till 4. And then at 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock, we're having a mini round dance with the Drift Pile drummers. And then from 6 to 8, we're going to have fiddling and a family dance with Alex Kirstoff and Donnie Larondale. And during all those events that are running, we'll have some little workshops doing keychains, beading, fish scale art, dream catchers, finger weaving, bannock on a stick. Just to kind of show the community we're here, our traditions are still here also. We still know who we are and where we come from. I just want to share the community that we'll also have free bannock burgers and fries also from 5:30 till 6:30.
Pour rappel, la journée de la chemise orange fait référence à l'histoire de la jeune Phyllis Webstad qui s'était vue offrir par sa grand-mère pour son premier jour d'école au pensionnat de la mission Saint-Joseph en Colombie-Britannique une nouvelle chemise de couleur orange. Arrivée à l'école, l'enfant s'est vu retirer ses vêtements, y compris sa nouvelle chemise. Elle ne lui a jamais été rendue. Cette journée est en mémoire de tous les enfants ayant été dans les écoles résidentielles du Canada. Hélène Lequitte, Nord-Ouest FM.
for myself and for a lot of for all Indigenous people across Canada, the only surprise about the grades at the residential school is to the broader Canadians in Canada. They haven't been. I almost want to say they haven't been listening. The TRC report came out in 2015, and if a person went through a lot of those documents, it talks about from survivors. They talk about kids being buried at those schools. Even my dad, like my dad went to residential school in Gruyard, and they had a graveyard there. Like, how many people go to a school, elementary school, and have a graveyard beside their school? Like, it's not normal, like, what happened, but it's there. So the surprise really is basically with the general public of Canada. I'm really hoping, though, with these discoveries that the Canadians as a whole, you know, open their hearts and their minds, and they start to learn more about what happened to us as, you know, to our people, like, you know, as Canada was formed. And I think if people really know the true history of Canada, we can have some more empathy towards each other and have a better understanding of where people are coming from.
May I ask you a sensitive question?
Sure.
Have you been yourself to a residential school?
No, my dad went to residential school.
Okay. And what kind of impact you could say that there was on your family, you as a kid, and perhaps if you have brothers and sisters?
Well, with your first question you asked me if I speak Cree. My dad never taught us Cree. I never understood why he didn't teach us Cree until I was much, much older, right? Like, when we were kids, he would just say, because you're better off not knowing. And I always took that, when he'd say that, I took it as, it's shameful to be, like, to acknowledge that we're, you know, Indigenous, Métis, you know, that we had that. That's what I took that as. But it was, the reality was, it was his impact from residential school, because he got hit whenever he would speak his language. His first language was French. He lost that in residential school, but he was able to retain the Cree, because everyone was, you know, you're in a predominantly Cree area. But that, you know, he never taught us Cree because of that, like from the residential schools of them doing that. I know a lot of people say, well, we went to residential school, like a lot of the, in this rural area, there is a lot of non-Indigenous people that attended the residential schools. The big difference is that those people left with their languages and their cultures intact. Mm-hmm. Our languages and cultures were stripped from us, or like, you know, from the people attending there. So I know, I do acknowledge that other people attended the residential schools, but the difference with Indigenous people is it was the plan, you know, like to take the language and our culture from us.
So the next question is what do you think about the apology of the Canadian bishop regarding the residential school experience, actually?
Like, what do I personally think about it?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. What do you think about their apologies?
I think it's too late. It doesn't feel like it's heartfelt when it took them. I mean, we got the TRC report in 2015, and we're in 2021 now, and now they finally did the apology, you know, and it's after that there was, the graves were found in Kamloops, that they give that apology when they know all along, they know what's going to be found at those other sites across Canada. So, I mean, I'm happy they made the apology, but I mean, it could have been sooner, that acknowledgement. It'll probably help some people too. I mean, and that's, at the end of the day, that's all you can do is help the people that are here, you know, still, and maybe it'll help them. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they mean it, or was it again? Is it political?
I don't know if I'd use the word political, but it's definitely got, to me, it's because they found those graves.
Mm-hmm. I heard from somebody here in Edmonton that it took some money, you know, to make the excavations in BC regarding the first graves. It was like around 1.5 million, and since 2009, some people, you know, advocated to get that money from the government, and the government, you know, was just postponing all the time that request. And apparently, so it, there are people from the community, the First Nation communities, found the way to gather all that amount of money. Have you heard about this?
The ask for the 1 point something million that was to the conservative government at the time, and it was turned down. And that was actually to search all the grave sites, or all the sites for the residential schools across Canada. But I mean, it's nothing changes, I guess, because it was a while ago that was turned down, right? So at least it's happening now, or going to happen now, right?
What is going to happen now?
Well, people are starting to search the sites, right? Mm.
I found out that it was everywhere in the press for a while, even internationally. And now people don't talk too much anymore. Did you make the same observation than me?
I knew that would happen. Like, even I got in a few arguments with people on social media. You know, they were quite upset. You know, what about all the children? Like, why are we just focusing on Indigenous children? And I had made a comment that, you know, let us have our 5 minutes. Because we don't get that 5 minutes very often. We don't get 5 minutes for anything that happens in our Indigenous communities, usually, you know, in national news. So that was my comment to them, and that's because that's the reality. We see that right across the board. Like, for many, many things, we see things, we could have somebody missing in our communities, and it doesn't get picked up by national news, or even sometimes regional news, or what have you, the stories. And then you'll see it for someone who's non-Indigenous, and it'll be, you know, everywhere, those kind of notifications. So it's, for me, it's our reality, I guess. You know, and I'm sad for that, though, also in a sense, though, right? Because, I mean, it does help us build up momentum when, you know, all of Canada is paying attention to what's happening and, you know, trying to advocate for things to change. But, I mean, either way, we just keep going, doing what we're doing in the communities, which is, you know, one of the main things for the events that we're holding in Peace River, the Orange Shirt Day event, is to bring awareness to the residential school that was in Peace River and residential schools across Alberta, because Alberta had the most residential schools in northern Alberta in such a concentrated area. So it definitely impacted our communities, and it impacts our people, like, generational. Like, we're still living with some of those impacts. Some people don't even know why their parents maybe did things to them that... Or, you know, you have a broken relationship with your parents or something, and a lot of people don't even understand that it wasn't their parents' fault also. It was that impact from residential school when you're taken at a small age and you're not mothered and fathered. You know, you don't have your parents loving you every day like how it should be when you're taken and you can't go home. Well, how are they to see that, right? Because a lot of times, too, kids got disconnected from their communities, and they weren't comfortable going back because now, you know, the schools were taking everything they knew from them and about their communities. They were, you know, taking that all out of them. So it was really hard for them to fit in afterwards. So there's a lot of that trauma that kind of drifted down to the next generation and the next generation.
So when we talk about reconciliation, what would be the most things to do to really prove that people, they really want to try to make that reconciliation?
I think for myself, for reconciliation, like for your average person in Canada, I guess would be for them to take the steps to learn more about the residential school impact on Indigenous people in Canada. There's so many resources out there, short movies they can watch on YouTube, or APTN has some out there. Even Amazon has an Indigenous kind of category where they have some residential school stories on there. So the content is out there. I think if the regular Canadian took the time to learn about how, like, about what happened to people in there, and I think that empathy they could learn from, understand, knowing more about what happens, would go a long way within the community, and just for themselves and for our community.
And if I want to talk to somebody, it would be like a specialist about the Indian Act, to understand exactly what legally that represents for First Nation and Métis all over Canada.
Well, your Indian Act, first of all, only applies to registered Indians.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I actually could recommend a couple books for you, like you're interested.
Yes.
There's one called The 21 Things You May Not Know About the Indian Act.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And the other one is called Indigenous Relations. And both of those books are by a guy named Bob Joseph. They would really help you just understand more about the Indian Act. I mean, in my opinion, I mean, it wasn't done to help the people. It was a way they wanted to get rid of.
Because it would be.
Well, in that Bob Joseph book, one of the first things he says about it: the roots of the Indian Act lie in the Bagot Report of 1844 that recommended that control over Indian matters be centralized, that the children be sent to boarding schools away from the influence of their communities and cultures, that the Indians be encouraged to assume the European concept of free enterprise, and the land be individually owned under the Indian land registry system, to which they could sell to each other but not to non-Indians. So the Bagot Report started the framework for the Indian Act in 1876, and then it just kind of rolls out from there with the different things, and they take certain things away.
I think because, you know, almost of the Canadian population is absolutely not knowledgeable about the Indian Act. I mean, they probably heard about it, but they don't know exactly what there is inside, what does that mean for First Nation people. And so on that basis, because I have the feeling it's a powerful tool for the Canadian government to keep going, you know, to put down some horrible things, you know, happen because of colonization. And besides, I have another question for you. I heard something, and I don't know what you are going to say about it. It's about the GRC, the police.
The what?
The police, the GRC. We call that GRC in French. I don't know. The police in Canada.
Oh, the RCMP.
Okay, the RCMP in English, sorry. Sorry. Okay. So, since I am in Canada for 16 years now, 16 years, I was so surprised to see all over Canada, from a province to another, all the horrible stuff or drama with First Nation people where, you know, policemen were killing or abusing people, men or women, by accident. This is what they say. And somebody explained to me a long time ago, when there was the colonization, the RCMP was designed by the Canadian government to control and maintain First Nation. And my analysis is there is like a systemic racism still in the RCMP, based on the origin and the creation of that institution.
And since Do I think that?
So it's my. I would like just to know if you would be agree or not about what I've just said.
Yeah, the RCMP were started just, you know, specifically to help settle the West, and the main job of them was to clear the Indigenous people basically off the plains. They took the kids to residential schools, right? Like, they enforced that.
But
so, I believe that, and I think part of the systematic racism, I mean, it's, the Indian Act itself is systematic racist, right? How do you stop being something? Like, the way they, you know, your status, a family member has a status, you know, First Nation Indian, and then, you know, and all of a sudden in you have your kids and your kid's not as bad as Indian because it's a Métis you maybe had a child with or something like that. There's all kinds of things in that. Like, how do you stop being one person or stop being... the whole thing is designed so that you don't have any status Indians in Canada, and then the Crown's obligation wouldn't be exist anymore, is how I understand, like, the purpose of why they set it up, the Indian Act, the way they did. The RCMP's role came in to enforce, you know, basically to be the police against the Indigenous people, I guess. I don't know how to say that. Growing up, we never looked at the RCMP as safety. We were always fearful of RCMP or people we figured that were, like, I don't know, like in control of something. We were always leery of that kind of thing. I didn't know later, like, why, where that came from. Like, came through our intergenerational trauma. Like,
No, I just have the feeling that the origin itself of how, you know, and why the RCMP was founded or and designed remains those days for the same reason, but because, you know, it's, there are patterns and, you know, the way how people think, because, like, it's kind of, it's like at the army in some ways, so you are, like, brainwashed.
It's hard to understand what you're asking me, but I mean, I'm not one that's saying get rid of the police or anything like that. Like, I know there's a lot of people going down that vein of thought. Like, I don't think it would have to be that extreme. I think the biggest thing is getting awareness of our true history of Canada to people, to the average Canadian. Like, I'm almost 50 years old, and I never learned about residential schools in school. You know, we never talked about Canada's history. You know, the real history, not the controlled stuff that they, you know, that they try and make it sound like what it is when it isn't like that. But I think with having people to be aware of the true history of Canada, blanket exercises, stuff like that, it makes a big difference in changing the way people think. The RCMP, I mean, they got a lot of work to do. I don't think they're close to... You know, I mean, they're on a path, I guess, of making some changes, but they're not close to even a halfway mark, I don't think, or a finish line yet. But they are doing work to change things internally. I am aware of that.
Do you know if they are aware to hire Aboriginal, I mean, First Nation people more in their units?
If they what?
If they are not aware, if they are more willing to hire more people from the First Nation community as policemen and policewomen?
There is lots of First Nation and Métis RCMP members across Canada. So, I mean, there's definitely that. I mean, they do some camps with kids in the summer to show, like, Indigenous kids to show them, you know, a career in the RCMP. But there has to be changes, like, internally, like, for... still within, but there is, I think there's still opportunity, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to stop the recording.